How do we know that evil won't lead to greater evils, that God does not intend instead of greater goods? Therefore, we are never to pursue evil so that good may come. Romans 3:8-9. Should we do all this evil so that in the end God will receive even more glory? Absolutely not. Paul's what are you thinking about there? I mean, he makes it pretty emphatic. That's not the way to go. Rather, we are always called to overcome evil with good. And I mean, isn't that the story we like seeing? That's Romans 12:21. But you know, we read those stories where it's the underdog, it's the bully kid who rises up against the bully and you know thwarts the plans. We want the good to overcome the evil in the stories that we read. Our finite and corrupted condition constrains us in ways that utterly separate us from the transcendently sovereign, wise, and holy ends of God.
Yeah, yeah. So we are limited. Furthermore, some goods cannot be achieved in any other way, right? Even an omnipotent God cannot achieve certain goods without certain prior evils. It would be wrong for him not to ordain certain evils, right? So, for example, in order for the greatest good ever, right, the plan of redemption to be brought about, the Son of God had to be unjustly tried and crucified.
Yeah.
Without knowing this plan, we would be appalled by the fact that it pleased the Father to crush his own Son,
right?
And so when Christ was tried and crucified, God ordained the greatest injustice ever. Yet it was precisely designed to achieve the greatest good that the world has ever known. God gladly ordains those evils he utterly hates, but he never ensures that any evil transpires if it would not achieve a far weightier good than the evil itself.
Right?
So no gratuitous evil. God is using that evil, no matter how heinous it seems, for a greater good. And that is the nub, right, the central core of the greater good defense.
I mean, if you're going to use an example, that's the one to use.
Yeah.
And we can see it played out. It's not, of course, you guys are reading the end of the story, but the people that were in Isaiah's time, reading Isaiah 53 and seeing, well, he was beat for our transgressions, he was killed. Well, okay, I don't see how that's possible. So,
what good is that? Right?
Right.
What good is it that he's beat for our transgressions?
Right, right? Yeah. And you see the Jewish leaders of the time, the Sadducees, saying like, no, this isn't possible. This is blasphemy for this to happen. There's no way that God can do this because this is opposite of who God is. But they're only reading it through the lens of by saying like, oh, God is so transcendent that it's not even possible for him to enter into our creation. And this is the arguments that the Muslims have against Christianity. It's God is changing his nature by doing this. And the proper response is no, it's not a change of nature. It's an addition to his nature. So is it impossible for God to become human? It doesn't seem like anything precludes him from this, and that's what we see in the story of deicide, the murder of God, the only special person to be killed who's 100% innocent of anything in the entire world. And we say, here's the greatest evil ever committed, and it's good. There's a reason why we call it Good Friday, not so sad, Friday.
Yeah, yeah. So sad, too bad Friday.
Right.